Abanigani, everyone. It's Professor Amin Ra, along with Rashki Maskani and Brother Mashinda out of Louisiana, bringing you to the Conscious Corner to bring forth information regarding to the life and the history of African Americans, along with discussing critical issues and solutions to some of the issues that we face as a people. America, as the young lady running for president said, America is not a racist country. And then you have other issues where a cartoonist for a publishing company said that white people need to stay away from black people because black people are terrorists. You know, although America is not a racist country, you have a Supreme Court ruling daily avoiding the issue of voting rights for African Americans in America. But America is not a racist. So we're going to be discussing some critical issues tonight. I'm Professor Amin Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, Africana Studies Department, former City Councilman for the City of Compton, former Compton College Board of Trustees member, and former Compton Unified School District member. I'm also a retired professor from Compton College, where I served as a director of the Transfer Center, a counselor, and a professor for over 10 years. I just want to say we welcome you, and we want you to know you found your family in a peaceful place, and we wish for all of you and your families blessings without numbers and all good things without end. So here we are. We're going to discuss tonight a number of topics, and we're going to start off with the issue of, well, first of all, we want to say this is the month of the martyrdom of El Haj Malik Shabazz, Malcolm X, or his martyrdom. We call it a martyrdom. Some people say this is the month of his assassination. But from a Kawaita philosophy, and in accordance with, in an agreement with Dr. Karenga, we called it his martyrdom, because assassination is what they did to him. But martyrdom is what he did for us by sacrificing his life, knowing that he would be murdered, but at the same time continued to struggle for his people and make contributions. He could have went to other countries and lived. He could have got refuge from other people in this country and still be living, but he chose to still get out there and speak truth to the people and criticize the power and institutional racism and build the organization of African-American unity, and at the same time maintain his ethical and moral and spiritual perspective of being a Muslim. So we want to honor Malcolm for all that he's done. We're going to start off by asking, well, first of all, we're going to start off like from probably a traditional standpoint of talking about good deeds and frontline actions of African people around the world and around this country. When I say around the world, we are world people. We're not just in our communities and our homes. We are interconnected to African people worldwide. And what's happening to the Africans in Nigeria with regards to the elections that they just held, what's happening to the Africans in Cuba, what's happening to the Africans in Brazil, what happened to the Africans everywhere. Pan-Africanism is a very important goal that we pursue, and that is being seeing all African people as our brothers and sisters. Well, we believe in Operation Unity, which is unity with diversity and unity without uniformity, meaning that we have a diverse ideological, philosophical, spirituality, and conceptualization of what's going on. We're not a monolithic people, but we have principles in which we come together on. and that we work together on collectively for all of our interests to be able to maintain our freedom of diversity and freedom of aspirations. We may not want the same thing, and that's okay. But under Operation Unity, we still can fit under this tent of unification by saying unity with diversity. We welcome different thoughts. It's okay to have different thoughts, but just don't be indifferent toward each other. In other words, you know, we don't argue and split because we have different perspectives. We come together on what we agree on, what we believe collectively with that principle. And unity with diversity means that we expect there's going to be diversity. Unity without uniformity. We don't have to say 100 assalamu alaikum. We don't have to say 100 bani gani. We're not required to dress in a certain way. And, you know, we make analysis of the psychological implications of certain behavior, but it's not to put them down, but just to raise what caused some of our people to wear yellow hair and what's causing some of our men to wear what we used to call pigtails on national TV and braided hair and wearing double earrings. What's causing that? And is it what Dr. Staples said, the demasculation of black men who used to stand on the corner holding their testicles, dressed sharp and talking strong, versus that one today that's talking about my husband's at home and things of that nature. So we deal with those type of issues. But anyway, we want to welcome you. We want to thank Brother Rachiki Maskani for providing us this platform through the educational network program, Community Education Network, the CEW, right? Rachiki Network.
CEN, Community Education Network.
Yeah, and for his hard work, his sacrifice, his putting up his personal resources to keep this platform going, and along with Brother Mashinda out of Louisiana, we need that Southern hospitality, that Southern knowledge, because over 50% of our people still live in the South. And so that's a critical perspective because they're battling every day with some of the same issues that they had hundreds of years ago. So we're going to start off with this. Which one do you want to start with, Rasiki? Let's start off with the stay away from black people are terrorists.
the cartoonist?
Yes.
Okay.
It is Scott Adams. He's made a number of racist comments in the past, but this one was that he was arguing that black people ain't gonna never like white people and that they pose an imminent danger to white people and white people need to stay away from them. You gonna play it?
Okay, let me make sure I have the sound on. Okay, was it on? Good, I checked it.
Or like a tease.
Let's see where this one takes me.
Experience more with hard to get tables from Chase Sapphire Reserve.
Wow.
Chase, make more of what's yours.
If, you know, nearly half of all blacks are not okay with white people, that's a hate group.
That was the comment that may have ended Scott Adams's newspaper career. The Dilbert creator referencing a poll from the conservative firm Rasmussen Reports that indicated 53% of black Americans agree with the statement, it's okay to be white, leaving the other 47% to say they disagree or aren't sure. The Anti-Defamation League has noted that that phrase has a long history in the white supremacist movement.
The best advice I would give to white people is to get the hell away from black people.
He continued to double down throughout his show. The Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, and USA Today among the hundreds of newspapers that denounced Adams and quickly pulled Dilbert. USA Today newspaper CEO Mike Reed.
It was frankly an easy decision. We found the remarks, you know, hateful, hurtful, and they just crossed the line.
But not everyone agrees. Twitter CEO Elon Musk coming to Adams' defense, tweeting, "The media is racist." Adams has since tweeted that he was only advising people to avoid hate and suggested that the cancellation of his cartoon signals that free speech in America is under assault.
We believe in free speech. We believe in creating a place for differing points of view. But there's a line that gets crossed where things become racism. And that's not an area we choose to traffic in or participate in.
We did reach out to the company that's responsible for distributing that comic strip. Still waiting to hear back, guys.
Brother Michelle, how do you respond to that?
Well, you know, it's nothing unusual or to me as far as or anything of shock value in terms of what the guy is saying. He's you know, I have more respect for him than some of the ones that don't speak up. You know, they got racist folks that they hide, and you know, he let you know. He said, "Hey, man, stay away from black folks." You know, he's letting you know how he feels, and you know, it's a known fact that you have people like him. So I'm not surprised by it. You know, I'm not a reader of Dilbert. I'm familiar with the comic strip. But that's as far as it goes. I'm not a reader of Dilbert. It's probably most blacks don't read Dilbert. So, you know, this is a guy that does have some weight because he's, you know, they have, you know, Dilbert is a famous comic strip. So therefore, there's a whole lot of millions of followers, I guess. I'll just throw numbers out. There's a lot of followers out there of Dilbert. And so he's this guy spreading hate and spreading, you know, but but what else is new? That's my thought on that, you know. So that's his business, you know. He feels that way, you know. He can stay away from me, but they're not people like that. Won't change, you know. They have an agenda, and it, you know, and that's it. It's a given. So that's how I feel right now.
Brother Roger Key, you know,
yes. I don't have much to say about that. It's just, it's the reality of things. When you have a system that's predicated on, you know, the basically a slave system, a racist system, you expect that the people who are in power to act that way. Or people that's, you know, that's white to act that way. You know, that's sort of like a given. And it just shows us that if we're not working to change the mindset of people, it's just always going to, you know, you're going to have these type of people that come out and show their real color. So. I'm not shocked at all. It's the nature of things that are in place at this time that we live in.
Why do you think, and you, I'm assuming the conjunction, that major newspapers and news and other people are criticizing? If this is, you know, like you and Machina was saying that, you know, it's not surprising. Why are they acting like it's a surprise and that it's wrong for him to say it publicly?
I think it's the nature of how things are going. These publications probably would get they would get a lot of pushback if they allowed that person to remain. And it's negative press to the point where it may hurt their pockets. It could be financial too, you know. And then you have prolific, you know, people like Ben Crump taking on cases. You know, they could have litigation against them, and it's there's ways to lose your money dealing with that. So it's sort of like it's overt, and some of these people would rather deal in a covert situation versus overt.
You remember there was a radio commentator a few years back. They referred to a black basketball team as bitches or something with nappy hair or something like that.
Yeah.
And they fired him. Then he came back richer. He got a bigger following. And, you know, he was condemned publicly. But they took him off the air, and then he come back, started another radio station, got more followers, got paid more money. The same thing, you know, that possibly with this young man, you know, Delbert may follow it, may not, but there are international white papers, there are other interviews that people may pay him to come on. My point is that, you know, it's a reason why at one time, and I think of Machinda contested it, black people used to pull their shades down in the South so that when the Klan come through, they couldn't look in their house. And the Klan used to wear sheets, and that things were done late at night. And under the cover of, you know, we, you know, the same guy that was at your lynching that night is in church Sunday, saying the whole world needs to hang their head in shame, as if he had nothing to do with it. And so, you know, we look at this as part of the white right wing boldness today. Whereas before they used to try to be, you know, just they didn't come out as open as they are. It's like more men, women saying they're gay because they've been gotten their rights. Somehow these people think it's okay for them to face the criticism they're gonna get for saying it,
well,
but they're speaking to a larger audience.
Well, let me say this, Professor Rob. Today, when my buddy was telling me about this, Brother California, that used to come on, he was telling me about this Dilbert cartoon artist. And we were talking. As we were talking, I told him that he would probably, you know, get a job somewhere else. This is just one place that he's not going to be a part of. And then, you know, because of all of these outlets, he would get another job somewhere, and being that he is white. And so that's just one. CNN, is that CEN? Or no, that was CNN who reported it. What publication company he works for?
He syndicated. He sends his cartoons, illustrations to various newspapers, and they all publish his. If I'm not mistaken, Machinda could tell us more about that.
Well, who is he getting banned from or taken away from?
All of them saying they're going to stop carrying his cartoons and his illustrations and cut him loose. Is that right, Machinda?
Yeah, all the mainstream ones are pulling back, like Rossi Q was saying, you know, because it's marketing, you know.
Yeah, but
so that's but yeah, he will get another job. You know, you got people that are getting voted in as senators that are, you know what I mean. So yeah, he's got the support. You know, to take a chance like that, he's rich already though. So he just kind of said, "Hey, I'm gonna say what I got to say." You know, it's kind of like committing suicide almost, but not really, because you know, like I think Rob was saying earlier, that you know, people get richer. You know, they become you know, a legend. You know, I mean, he's famous for Dilbert, but he'll become like a there you go. He that's what that's his goal, is be remembered as a hero. He gave Dilbert all the credit. Now he wants to go out as a hero, and so he's gonna make. He said, "Get away from black people." He'll make a statement. I call it brazen. Brazen, B-R-A-Z-E-N, brazen. That's what that is. Bold and without shame. That's what that is. And so that's where the world is brazen.
He could run for president of state, United States Senate. I mean, the notoriety of it is that, as Machinda was saying, yeah, he's brazen. And that's my point, that more of them are getting brazen publicly. When Elon Musk can jump up and say, you know, hey, he has a right to say that. You know, this is a man that hires millions of people in Amazon, wherever he, now I don't think he got Amazon, but he got the Tesla, and black people are trying to buy electric cars and stuff. But anyway, my point is that you're correct. He wasn't working for none of those newspapers. He was writing for them. They were trying, he had syndications with major newspapers. And, you know, they have to, once they, you know, they may still owe him money. You know, he may have signed two or three contracts. And, you know, you divert your money. You don't take it all at one time, because then you have to pay too many taxes. So you have your money spread out. Why pro athletes always renegotiating their contracts. Because their grandkids will get that money, and auntie, great-great-grandkids, because they have to spread it out over the years. So he felt comfortable enough with regards to whatever, as Machinda was saying, repercussions he was going to get, he didn't care. He just was speaking to his people. Machinda, they said something that's very important. He said, you know, we don't look at those cartoons. We don't look at that. But who do? Who do? That's who he was talking to. The ones that do. I never heard of it. You know, and I don't know about you, Roski. You ever hear of it?
Yes. Okay. I've heard of Dilbert, but I never was interested. So I never...
Dilbert is the cartoon. I'm talking about the guy Adam.
I never knew the guy. I just heard of the cartoon, like, and that was it.
Well, I never watched cartoons. I broke up my toys when I was 2 years old. I stopped playing. You understand? So you know, life's too serious for me. But my point is that. You know, he felt brazen enough, and I like the way Machinda put that, that he was comfortable saying it. I mean, he was just comfortable. But I want to know, he wasn't talking to us. You know, he was saying that he was talking to whites and recruiting for whites who want to say it and come out and be brazen. It was brazen what they did to Emmett Till. It was brazen what they did to Martin Luther King. It was brazen what they did to many black people that they lynched and killed. So brazen is a freedom that they enjoy to tell what they really feel deep inside. Are they covering up and suppressing their anguish toward people like black people? And when you say black people, you include everybody that's not white. And even their collaborators and allies that may have racial mixtures and things of this nature. You know, I mean, we have to look at it more than just, oh, well, this is just white people being white. You understand? Is there a subliminal message in it for them to get more brazen? You understand, towards open warfare with regards to assassinations and killings and even like you got more white women getting on school boards, more white women and men getting on local elections to change policies and to do things that ban books and do all kinds of things. So, Machinda, how you feel about that? Machinda, you still there? Roger Key, you lost the internet?
No, I'm here.
Well, I don't know what happened to Machinda. I think we lost him.
Yeah, he'll probably come back. Somebody needs the link, so I'm about to send them the link.
But anyway, so that brazen, very important key term that Machinda introduced us to. Okay, well, why don't we go to the next topic?
Okay, which one?
The one about the jails and the prisons.
Okay. Right.
Democracy Now.
Okay. One second here. Let me get it. All right. Okay, you want to play the
Yeah, he just organized it.
You got everybody? Okay. Come on closer, Ollie. Y'all can come on closer. Let's get closer because we want the camera to see all the families. Is everybody ready? Okay. I'm Attorney Ben Crump, along with my co-counsel, Attorney Paul Grinke, my investigator Arthur Reed. We have the honor of representing the families of Jacoby Pillar, Kevin Smith, Gary Smith, and Kristen Smith. From Jacoby Pillar family, we're going to have his sister Octavia Wagner address you, as well as Ari Pillar address you. Then we're going to have Christian Smith's mother, Deborah Smith, address you.
Ready for your dream getaway? Start planning your next vacation. From weekend escapes.
No, she said
Deborah Smith. We have Deborah Smith, who is unrelated to Kevin Smith and Gary Smith. Gary Smith's brother, who is also the father of Kevin Smith, is going to address you on his behalf. And his mother, Tracy Woodson Smith, is going to address you on behalf of her baby boy, her youngest son, Kevin Smith. And it is really tragic when you think about Miss Tracy Woodson Smith and Kevin Smith Sr. They lost two family members in the Harris County prison within a month's time. And so we're here to ring the alarm because it is appalling. It is appalling that you will have 32 detainees die in the Harris County jail in a 14-month period. I mean, nobody really would believe it unless you had these bodies that showed you it was really happening. On average, it's two people a month dying in the jail here in Houston. I mean, I can't even fathom what excuse they can come up with to try to explain or justify losing so many detainees in the county jail. We are here to announce this morning that we are making a formal request to the United States Department of Justice to open up an investigation into what is going on in Houston, Texas at the Harris County Jail. I had the pleasure of speaking with Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, who is the ranking member of the Criminal Justice Committee in the United States House of Representatives, who is joining us and making this request to the Department of Justice, because Houston, we have a problem.
Is that enough, or you want more?
Oh, go ahead. Let's play. Hear from the parents.
In the Harris County Jail. And we cannot continue to look the other way, because how many people have to lose their sons and daughters, their brothers, their sisters, their husbands? How many more before we say we have to do something? I mean, when you think about the fact that Ms. Deborah Smith's daughter had diabetes, she had medical issues. They talked about it. And the fact that they would deny her daughter medical assistance and medicine that they knew she needed is reprehensible. We think about Jacoby Pillar, who really, when you think about it, and you hear from his family, misdemeanor trespassing. I mean, he never should have been there in the first place. But you're going to hear from Attorney Grinker, who talks about reasons we believe that he was not, his death was not due to natural causes. And as we all know, recently there was a guard who was charged with manslaughter in the death of another detainee in the Harris County Jail. You're going to hear from Ari Pillar, who is a sister to Jacoby Pillar, who's going to talk about when she worked at the Harris County Jail in 2021, how she witnessed altercations between guards and detainees, that tells you that this is a pattern. This is a practice. This is a culture in the Harris County Jail. And so we know in 2023, in the technological age that exists in American society today, that there is video surveillance throughout that jail. What we're demanding is transparency, so we can get to the truth and we can get to justice. Because as his mother said, Kevin Smith Jr. was in good health. There was nothing wrong with him, as his father says. So it's inexplicable why their son is dead. And so these are the things that we're grappling with. We are going to get to the answers of it.
Okay,
we are
Roger.
Not going to continue to let...
So, Machinda, you there?
Yeah, I'm back.
What do you think about that aspect of what's going on?
Actually, I didn't really hear him, what he was saying. Said something about Kevin Smith Jr. Is that who he's talking about?
He was talking about Harrison Clark Jail in Houston, where a number of young men and a woman died in custody because of them denying the medical attention or are being mysteriously found dead in the jail within a, I don't know, a 60-day period. I think he talked about maybe 5 or 6 people. Black people were found dead. I'm not sure, Rochester, did you get the number? You're on mute, Roger Key.
I think in the past, 14 months, 32 people killed?
Yeah.
Something like that? Yeah.
But
or died?
Yeah.
While being detained in that jail, Harris County Jail in Houston.
You catch it right, Machinda.
Yeah, I did hear a little about that. You know, haven't looked more into it, other than the Dilbert creator. You know, these things have been happening for a long time, they've stepped it up. You know, they stepped it up, you know, kind of like what Francis Welsing always talks about, the different fronts, you know, that white supremacy, the attack surface, where they, you know, the different areas, where, you know, education and here it is, you have, you know, criminal justice, you know, it's alive and well. Nothing new under the sun. It's just, you know, with social media and also media, you know, they all compete for dollars to show you what's going on. But at the same time, they propel a lot of this as well. You know, they propel a lot of it. I mean, they are the prime mover, so to speak, of all of that, you know. So it's sad. But it's just an example of, just like, if you take the city of New Orleans, they're trying to recall the mayor, and you know, so they get gathering signatures and all that kind of stuff. You know, the woman there, and you know, it's all a lot of salt on, you know, and there's some black people involved with that as well. You know, who and I'm not, you know, like I said, I don't live in New Orleans, but and at the same time, but it's still, you know, black people are easy prey. If they let, you know, in a lot of ways, that's in these positions of leadership. It also, like I say, it's open season. That's what it seems like. You know, you got these Marjorie Greens and different people in the Senate. You look what's going on in Jackson, you know, with Lumumba and them. You know, Jackson's 83% white, black, 83% black. And then, so it when they ask for help from the state, for, you know, when the water crisis and things like that, the governor, you know, of course, he didn't even get involved with it, and, you know, didn't support it, and made comments like, you know, hey, it's a good day not to be in Jackson, stuff like that. So they it's open season, you know, because they're choosing their sides. They say, hey, I'm with him. Everybody's being bold, you know, so. It's a war. It's a battle. It's something going down. It's in progress. The whole thing is in progress. And that's just another example. And we were talking about Dilbert. You know, they were talking about Andrews McMill Universal. I don't know if you had talked about that, but that's the distribution group that distributes Dilbert. They're the ones that distribute Dilbert. They're cutting him loose. You know, of course, everybody's concerned about their brand. But anyway, back to the jail situation. Wow. You know, that's not only tragic, but hey, it's what's going on. What do we do about it, though? What do we do about it? I mean, I'm sure people are speaking on it and saying whatever they're saying, but is it getting a lot of attention or whatever? So that's just something to be researched. But criminal justice is a bad front for us. You know, it's a, you know, when, if we're partaking in that game or going into the system, you know, even though sometimes we like political prisoners, sometimes we, you know, they go after us, you know, that kind of thing. So, man, but it's open season. That's what it appears to be. So that's what I think about the whole thing.
Well, Machinda, the issue was that these people in jail, they're not in prison. Many of them never even got brought before a judge. You know, one of the people had been waiting months because he couldn't get bail to go before the judge, even to face his charges. Some of them hadn't even put in an opportunity to plead guilty or not guilty, and they ended up dead. That's what's some of the issue here too. But right in the South, Texas, Mississippi, Angola prison. Have you heard of that, Machinda?
I've been there twice.
Tell us about it.
Well, it's 18,000 acres of prison. It used to be a plantation. The African Angola, the country of Angola, you know, that they brought in Africans there. There was a plantation. They named it Angola, and it's Angola. And 18,000 acres, and the prison warden is like a governor. You know, he got his own power. He's got his own, you know, I mean, he seemed like, well, he's more powerful than the governor as it relates to his domain. You know, I mean, he's not as powerful from a statewide perspective, but he governs that 18,000 acres. And when you go in there, they have prison guards, the police, you know, they own horses like slave days. And you see the brothers out there, you know, working in the field, things like that. And, you know, they, you know, using Pulaski tools and all kind of different tools to chop down weeds or whatever they're doing out there. But that's what they do in Louisiana. They got horses in the prison. They got horses outside the prison. And then they got the gun towers, of course. They got the, but it's like, it's kind of like a slavery gun line, like a slavery mentality, you know. So, but Angola's tough. Angola is surrounded by maybe three or four waterways where you can't even escape because you're going into the bayous or the swamps where the alligators are. It's no way you can escape, but like one way, kind of like maybe, I don't know, if you got to go south. And of course they got it. You're not getting out. You can't, you know, you can't hop the fence and go this way or that way because you're surrounded by water. The point I'm making is they got the lifers, you know, brothers that are doing life in prison who will address, the young children to try to scare them straight and things like that, you know. And that's what I was a part of, bringing some kids there on a couple occasions where just to, hey, this is the last call for alcohol, as they used to say in the clubs, you know, like, hey, you better get it now because it's going to close, you know, and you want to keep acting the fool, this is where you're going to be at. And some of them was talking nonsense or whatever. But these jails in the South, man, they're you know, I tell you, these sheriffs, see, those locals are even more serious than the, you know, back to what you were saying. I'm not surprised in that because the local facilities are sometimes harder than the, from a police standpoint and brutality standpoint, they're more violent than the prisons a lot of times, you know. It's just the way it is. It's those racist police departments and those elected sheriffs, those rednecks, they'd hire. And they try to, you know, give you a front, you know, because a lot of them in a lot of towns, they need the black vote in order to win, you know, down south, Mississippi and Louisiana and a lot of black areas where they need to vote. So they appeal to some of them. And but at the end of the day, you know, they have a race of, they have a motive in them that's, you know, and but allowing this kind of abuse going on that's flaring up, you know, it's kind of like Signal Hill, you know, the thing about that with, you know, Ronnie Settles, you know, and course, you know all about that. It's the same thing. These local and a lot of these police departments, these local police departments, they hire these folks from Iowa or Idaho, you know, Quarter Lane, Idaho, and different places. Because see, they're policemen and law enforcement folks that don't make money in those in some of those places, so they come to Houston, to L.A., to Detroit, to New York, to make some, you know, try to make money. A lot of them go to L.A. That's why you get a lot of them, like, in, you know, in the sheriff's departments, because they, a lot of them, they, that's where their roots are. They, you know, they bring that, they've got military background, a lot of them. And so for them to, so it sounds like there's a revolution going on in the jail in Houston, and the brothers are saying, hey, you guys, you know, you guys ain't feeding us right. Something's wrong there, where they, you know, so, you know, it's kind of like they trying to quell something. They're trying to quiet them down. And so they, you know, they just dogging them out, you know, because to bring this kind of heat on themselves, first of all, they, you know, like what Bobby Wright say, psychopathic racial personalities, you know, so it's not unusual. But at the same time, back to the word brazen, you know, why are you guys like the wolves that are coming out in the daytime in people's neighborhoods? Before, y'all used to be in the woods, and if we cross you out there hunting, or cross you out, well, not so much hunting, but just if we cross, we might be in danger, but you never seen them hardly in your neighborhood, and especially in the daytime. Well, now they coming out in the daytime. Like, you know, it's just unfortunate. You know, vampire don't stay at, you know, don't wait tonight no more. He come out to bite in the daytime. So they're terrible, man. That's all. I'm done.
Yeah, but even in Angola, they did a documentary on it. I had a copy of it. They have their own graveyard.
It's called Camp Lookout. Camp Lookout, man, Camp Lookout is a trip. You go there and you see, I mean, it looked like the veterans, plots. But don't, you know, they're lined up in a row. But guess what? A lot of them don't even have any names on them. Because years ago, they used to didn't even put a name on them. They just bury them. They didn't even recognize them. But later on, I don't know what year it was, but it probably was before the, you know, after the 60s or something, where they start putting names on them, you know, that kind of thing. But it's Camp Lookout. People that die in the prison, you know, they usually let you go home with your people, you know, if you're about to die. But a lot of them, they pass away in there. Yeah, they got their own post office there. The people
A lot of them been in there so long that even when they have appeals and win appeals, the warden sometimes don't release them for years, you know, even if they win their appeal, because they're under the auspices of the warden or the correction, the department. It's hard to get parole out of Angola. It's hard to get, even if you win an appeal, it's hard for it to matriculate to the point that you get released in a timely manner also. That's the only thing I was pointing out. What you said and describing it is something that the federal government knows is going on, but has not done anything about it. You know, under the auspices of state rights and there's not enough, as you say, what are we going to do about it? Well, we continue to struggle. That's what we continue. And we continue to educate and speak truth to the people. And we education, mobilization, organization, and then confrontation. And it's hard to... And thank you, Machinda, for that analysis and perspective in comparison to Harrison Jail, that the incarceration and the treatment in incarceration, I'm going to get to that later. It's amazing how many people are in a detention. Jail is more of you do misdemeanors or do a year in jail at the most. Sometimes year, a couple of years you can do in jail. But it's different from being in prison. Prison is what you are sentenced to. And sometimes you're sentenced to X amount of time in jail. But at the same time, the majority of the people are in there because they can't bail out right away. Or they make the bail so high they can't get it. And that's what bail reform is all about. But Rasha Key, what are your comments on this issue? Harrison in prison.
This very unfortunate. This is why I say, because of the value system that we live under, that we, our value system as a race, black race, needs to change, because we didn't took on the personality of our oppressor. And whenever you do that, you try to be like them. And when you be like them, you fall into all of these little traps that are set for you, you know. And this is why we need to make some changes to our mentality on what we value. If you don't make all of these mistakes, which are habitual traits that you learn from the system, you have a less of a chance of getting arrested and, you know, going to these jails and these detentions. So it's a great challenge to stay away from a prison or jail. when you doing things that are not essential, as they said, you know, do essential things only. When we had COVID around and you couldn't go places, I think if we had a value system of essential, doing things more essential, we wouldn't get in a lot of these traps. But sometimes you can't avoid it because they're going to target you anyway, just by the way you look. But that, I think it's an unfortunate situation. I'm glad that there's attention brought to it so they can start, you know, putting pressure on that jail system to change some things.
Well, we two issues. Cochran Penitentiary, Roscoe Poindexter, who played for Cal State Long Beach, turned state's evidence. He was a correction officer there, and he presented all type of evidence of prisoner abuse, from police letting black people get raped to them betting on fights in the yard and using all type of cruelty things on the black prisoners and things of this nature. And they ended up firing Roscoe, and he won lawsuits later. But the point is that, you know, he came there and he decided to tell. There's a code that you don't talk on. You don't be an officer and turn in other officers. The other thing is, as Machinda was pointing out, that, you know, penitentiaries ran almost independent. Let me give an example. They investigate themselves, and they don't use prisoners as witnesses unless a federal agency come in and make them an informant, because they're investigating the prison. And they've done that a couple of times. That's how they got Baca. You know, they had in L.A. county jail, they tried to cover up police abuse, and they had an informant, the feds, and they recorded the police doing these things and bringing in drugs and doing all kind of abusive things. But the point is that I was in captivity at one time, and the police on trumped up charges. They still trumped up, you understand, because they, for whatever reason, they needed me. They need to criminalize me. And your people sometimes just believe whatever they say, whatever the police say, whatever the courts say. They ain't come to trial. They didn't even know. They never have. Not one person have asked me what really happened. You know, and you know, they pick other people to ask, but they never asked me. But anyway, let me just say this to you. I witnessed an Asian trying to commit suicide while he was in jail. He was right down the cell from me. The jailer was making it. First of all, we've both been on 24-hour watch, really high power. But the guard came in, saw him hanging, but he couldn't go in there by himself. That's their rule. He had to call in and run out and get help to go back and have another person come into the cell and wait for the other person to come to go and get the agent down, because they're not allowed to go in a cell by themselves. So in jail, they can handcuff you in the front and you can walk out. But you're not, especially if you're not, you know, where you know, you're not. In prison, they handcuff you in the back and you bag out. If you walk out in the prison front, they can say that's aggression and beat you down. So you have to bag out when you're in prison, but you can walk out, they handcuff you in the front when you're in the county jails. In L.A., I don't know what they're doing in Angola and stuff like that, you know. But the point is that there was another person who was arrested for shooting a sheriff deputy. And that night, we heard the hollering and the beating and things of this nature. And the next day, they said he committed suicide. And there's about 10 of us in there, and not one person investigating this young man's death. They just took the police position. You know, that, you know, he died from hanging himself or beating himself in the with something or doing something. Second, we saw a Latino kid who was in the shower. And sometimes in the shower, you can use a cell, use a telephone, or they give you X amount of time to shower. And he wouldn't get out the shower because he got in there late or something. So they called the goon squad, and they beat this Latino. We witnessing this, unconscious. They had to carry him out, and the Latino mafia said he died. Not one investigator asked us who were in the cell, I mean in the Blitz jail block, what happened? They just let the police write up the report. There was a situation in LA County jail where a Latino went looking for a witness, one of the people that's going to testify against him. And he went from all over the jail as a messenger or something, found him, killed him, and got away. Now, we as black people, when we walk, where you going? If you know, even if you with an escort, where you taking him? You understand? They check you. They didn't check this guy. They didn't just run around. My point is that they don't investigate the crime by looking for, they don't consider you a witness if you're incarcerated. They won't even investigate. They investigate themselves. They run it like Masinda was saying, like it's their own little area. And that's what got Baca sentenced. Baca was sentenced by Judge Percy Anderson, who is the uncle of my daughter, Sheree. He sentenced Baca. Baca was trying to claim he had mental problems, blah, 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 blah. He was the chief of the sheriff. The sheriff of LA County when they got him. And he was looking for leniency. I think he's out now, but if he ever went in and did a bunch of time. But Percy Anderson also got a petition for release of a brother who was supposed to have been released, and they were waiting on Percy Anderson to sign it. This is a brother judge. And Percy Anderson had it on his desk and wouldn't sign it for a whole year. And the brother ended up dying in prison. That's the power of judges. And so when they talk about that immunity, what they call it, Machinda, when you came through the police and came through it, and that's what's holding up the George Floyd reform,
impunity.
No, just what Machina was saying is it's about you can't sue the police for damages if they hurt you or do something.
Yeah, it's immunity.
It's immunity, but they call it something else.
Yeah, it's.
Well, that now extends to the police, it extends to judges and prosecutors. If they make a mistake and send you to prison, and they even knew that you was innocent, you can't sue them. You can't sue a judge who sentenced you. Let's say he sentenced you to 50 years, you do 25. You can sue the state, but you can't sue that judge personally, even if he knew you was innocent.
Legal immunity.
It's something that they call depth, you know, you close to it, Machinda, but qualified immunity. Qualified immunity. They want that goes to prosecutors, judges, sometimes Congress people. It's hard to sue them. They have what they call qualified immunity. And that's the issue that is holding up the Judge Floyd police reform thing of this nature. Now, and so I, first of all, I never want to thank everybody for being on the show tonight. This was very informative discussion, and I really want to thank Brother Machinda for giving us that insight on Angola, that is a former plantation named after the continent of Africa, Angola, the Angola and Africa, until they brought people the work on the plantation and how it's ran. And thank Rasta people for providing us this platform tonight. We're going to,
Professor Rod, you didn't want to show the about Malcolm X. Did you want to show that or save it?
We'd save that.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll save that. You know, I think we covered enough tonight. Okay.
All right.
Go ahead. Tell us what's going on Wednesday.
We have a brother coming on, Brother Umar Hakim, and I want to show it. I think we should have it up. Let me show it right quick. Yeah, we have it up. So I'll just show everybody. Brother Umar Hakim, he was on our show when we first started, maybe the third guest on our show. So the topic is hate crimes in Los Angeles County. Are we prepared going forward? So that should be very interesting. But that's on Wednesday.
Okay. And I'm still trying to get Carl Douglas and this brother named Greg. Anyway, he's the vice president of Black Lives Matter, LA chapter. And they haven't called me back. That's all. I'll say that. And we're going to try to have one of them on next Monday. All right?
Okay.
And we're going to still may have that tribute to Malcolm also. All right.
All right. So each one to each one?
Yeah.
Conscious corner.
All right, then.
All right. We're going to take our pause.
Yeah.